I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact, and this is some of what we're going to be talking about today.
He's playing to a paid audience. He's paying these people to sit in their seats and cheer him.
That is what he says about Bibi Netanyahu. It's interesting. The man who was fired for telling the truth about the Iraq war drops another truth bomb about Bibi Netanyahu. And he's not alone, by the way. This is Direct Impact. I am Rick Sanchez. Hey, let's do this. So I was thinking this morning about what we were going to talk about, and I want to talk about something that you probably don't know much about. So let me just ask you, do you know what the Durham Report is? The Durham Report. You probably don't know. You're probably shaking your head right now knowing, what is the Durham Report, right? Why would you, when the media probably gave it about 2 minutes worth of coverage, even though they gave the Russiagate story about 2 years worth of nonstop coverage? So here it is. John Durham is this guy who was a prosecutor, very well-known, successful prosecutor, who was assigned the job of finding out if Russia actually did interfere, which would be serious, with U.S. politics, right? And about a year ago, he finally put out his report that essentially detailed how the whole damn thing was a lie.
Here are some major takeaways from the report. So Durham finds that, one, the FBI didn't have sufficient information to open the case investigating Trump's alleged ties to Russia. The Bureau relied on raw, unanalyzed, uncorroborated intelligence. Durham also criticizes the FBI's inability to corroborate any of the infamous Steele dossier, which contained a series of salacious allegations about Trump and his possible ties to Russia. The FBI operated with bias and different standards between Trump and 2016 Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton. And finally, even though the report offers a scathing rebuke of the FBI's conduct regarding the Trump-Russia probe, it does not recommend any new charges against individuals.
So there you have it. After essentially demonizing an entire country, Russia, for doing something they did not do, as you just heard, those are my words, right? That's on the Hill as they report the story the day it came out. Something they did not do, interfering in U.S. politics, this report comes out and essentially says, oops, sorry, it was all fake. It was a fake accusation, fake investigation, essentially a fake news story. But it was pushed by the Hillary Clinton team, her advisors, who apparently were mad that she lost the election. I would be too. I get it. And they also have a reputation of being very anti-Russia before they lost the election. So this is a perfect opportunity to make up this story that works so well for them, right? They get to make up a lie about Russia while at the same time they're trying to make Trump look bad, right? That story, that one about Russia, Trump, and interference caused in the, I know it's an old story, but trust me, there's a reason I'm telling you this today. So the story is about Trump and interference and the media, the Democrats, the corporate military establishment, and the neocons had to create this story to put it in the collective minds of Americans. And in the meantime, they go crazy with the story. They seem to be enjoying it. They went down this completely nonsensical rabbit hole, which was based on the following narrative, okay? Now, this is what we're talking about. How dare any country, no less Russia, interfere in America, interfere in our politics, and tell us who we can vote for or what we can do? Now, the reason I'm telling you that story is here is the double standard.
All our enemies should know this. Those who attack Israel will pay a very heavy price. That's what total victory means, and we will settle for nothing less.
Talk about interfering and influencing America. This guy, Netanyahu, he picks up the phone. He tells Congress he needs to come here and give a speech and that they need to applaud him. Then he talks about killing and continuing to kill as many people as he wants to for as long as he wants to, and they stand and applaud him. Remember, the majority of Americans don't like this guy. They're against the massacre he's conducting in Gaza. That's official. Go look it up. Right? Last time I checked, it was over between 53 and 60% of Americans don't like him, don't like what he's doing in Gaza. But Congress is applauding him, which is essentially like saying, go ahead, please, interfere in our politics all you want. Do what you want. Kill whoever you want. We got your back. You think I'm kidding? You think I'm kidding when I say that Congress told him we got your back? In fact, the butt-licking of Netanyahu is so bad, so grotesque, that the guy who is in charge of Congress, right, the Speaker of the House, he actually put out a statement saying that anybody who publicly disagrees with Netanyahu would be arrested. Here it is.
So he did. We got it scheduled. It'll be next week. It will be a big thing. And I want you to know that there's a number of Democrats in the House who have said they're going to boycott the event. Yeah. Yes. And then some others are going to protest. Listen, we're going to have extra sergeants at arms on the floor. And if anybody gets out of hand, the Speaker of the House will bang the gavel. We're going to arrest people if we have to do it. We're going to get the message out.
We're going to arrest people who may disagree with what the President of the United States, the President of Israel has to say. It's like he's saying to Netanyahu, please come here, interfere in our politics. And if anybody gets in your way, we'll take care of them and make sure that nobody hears from them or hear what they have to say. So much for democracy, right? This is our country, our beloved country. These are our leaders, right? So why is this incredible double standard happening? Now, here's what former U.S. Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter, who tried to warn us about Iraq and was pulverized by the neocons for doing it, has to say about Netanyahu's speech.
He's playing to a paid audience. He's paid right. These people to sit in their seats and cheer him. And he's paid them so well that the head of the U.S. Congress, the Speaker of the House, Mr. Johnson, has threatened to arrest people and charge them should they somehow disrupt the scripted scene that's going to take place.
How is he wrong? Manila, is this not one of the most preposterous examples of a double standard that you have ever seen?
Well, I mean, I think it goes beyond double standard. At this point, it's just how Washington operates, Rick. I mean, I've been here for over a decade now, and I've seen it firsthand. And I think more recently, we can attribute the new information that's been brought to light to Congressman Thomas Massey of Kentucky when he was interviewed by Tucker Carlson on his independent, on Carlson's independent network, when he revealed that every member of Congress, except him, so 434 members of Congress, have individual AIPAC handlers. Yeah. Now, AIPAC, of course, is the largest lobbying group for Israel in particular. It's a joint American-Israeli lobbying group that does not have to register under FARA. They have, for years and years, I mean, all of the latter half of the 20th century, are outright lobbying for the benefit of a different country, and they've never had to register under the Foreign Agents Registration Act, which is mind-boggling when you compare this to what you opened with the Durham report, that shows all of that was a big phony fake lie right. Coming based from the Hillary Clinton campaign. It was a campaign hit job that kind of octopused its way out into the ether, into the American ethos. And most Americans still believe that, Rick, and yet they believe that Israel is America's friend.
Yeah,
so how do we square that?
It's almost like one country is punished for interfering even though they didn't interfere, and the other one is rewarded for interfering as much as they want. Meanwhile, we're giving them a ton of money, which they're then using our money to buy our politicians to get Bibi Netanyahu an audience and a standing ovation. This is crazy. I will say this, though, to be fair. There is some semblance of democracy remaining because there were some elected officials who have spoken out. You mentioned Thomas Massey. He's one on the Republican side, not afraid to tell the truth. On the left, there are people like Bernie Sanders and Jerry Nadler. By the way, both of these guys are Jewish Americans. Let's take a listen.
To the best of my knowledge, however, tomorrow will be unique in bringing Prime Minister Netanyahu to address a joint meeting of Congress. It will be the first time in American history that a war criminal has been given that honor.
His political interest is to keep the war going as long as possible because he knows that as soon as the war is over, he'll have to face a commission of inquiry as to why he was telling Qatar to arm Hamas before the election and why he ignored warnings from the military about the attack on October 7th, which they had warnings about a few hours earlier. And why, for that matter, it took 12 hours for tanks to come 60 miles from the West Bank to the kibbutzim on the Gaza border.
By the way, for those of you watching us, millions of you I know who watch this show regularly from all over the world, please understand that what you just saw there is not typical of U.S. politics. Those guys are out there, right, making this point. The real fear is that after paying off the U.S. Congress and getting their approval, Netanyahu will now continue his total war and engage our country and the world in more wars as he wants to bomb Lebanon, bombing Yemen, and who knows where else with our money and our weapons until he gets us into a war with Iran and possibly the precipice of World War III. While we're applauding, yay, keep going, dude, keep doing it. By the way, his chief cheerleader also came out and finally spoke last night. He didn't look so good, by the way. Here's a clip of President Biden.
When Ben Franklin was asked, as he emerged from the convention going on, whether the founders have given America a monarchy or a republic, Franklin's response was, a republic, if you can keep it.
I think he was trying to say Franklin, but he said Franken. I think he was trying to say Constitutional Convention and instead, Congress, and he said convention. And he was reading this stuff off the teleprompter, Manila.
Oh, I already said my piece about Joe Biden. I stopped looking at him as the commander-in-chief, as the president of the United States, much, much less the leader of the free world these days, Rick. So, you know, I just at this point see the human side, and all I see is a defeated and feeble old man at this point. So it's hard for me to kind of lay into him and be journalistically fair, because the human side of me just sees this. But we
will, right.
Look, he has met privately with Benjamin Netanyahu, despite the fact that Biden refused, or I don't know if he refused, but he did not go to the joint session, and neither did Kamala Harris, where Netanyahu gave that hour and a half long war-hawking speech, as Bernie Sanders alluded to there. But at this point, I mean, there is no separation and no daylight between the Joe Biden administration and the Netanyahu administration and their ongoing efforts in Gaza. There's so much money being exchanged left and right, back and forth, top to bottom. There's no more extracting the two. The two countries are, the U.S. and Israel are marching lockstep in all the atrocities that we're witnessing in Gaza. And it all has to do with money, Rick, all of it.
Yeah. And what a picture. The real president of the United States looking like he's in the critical care unit of an old folks home, while the real president of the United States is giving a speech in Congress and getting a round of applause for it. It's just a weird time to live in this world. When we come back, thanks, Manila. When we come back, let's talk a little more about that. Those optics that I just described, right? We're going to discuss Lebanon as well with a journalist and political commentator, Leila Hatoum, who is one of the most prolific and courageous voices that's coming out of the region these days. She's going to join us here in just a little bit. Don't go away. Okay, welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is Direct Impact. And joining us now is Leila Hatoum. She's a communications expert. She's a journalist. She's had a role in government. And it's important to be able to talk to somebody like Leila to get a different perspective, especially on a day like today. Leila, I want to start with something I was just thinking about as I was hearing Manila talk, and it's almost like the optics of what happened in the world yesterday and in the United States, specifically in the U.S. Congress. So here's how I see it. We have the president of the United States, right? And he is speaking to the country, and he's doing so in Congress, while getting a rousing ovation from all the members of Congress. He's determinative, he is forceful, he is vindictive, and the more he talks about war and killing, the more applause he gets. And then we have the guy named Joe Biden, who gives an 11-minute speech where he can barely pronounce most of the words that he's reading off of a teleprompter. Did you ever think the world would come to this point?
I never thought of it even in my wildest dreams. I mean, at one point or another, you have someone who you didn't even expect would last 11 minutes. He lasted 11 minutes, but we didn't understand a single word of what he said. And then you had somebody coming over, interfering in basically American, basically internal affairs, slandering part of the population in the U.S., dictating what he wants to say, running lies, and basically your Congress just basically gave him way to do that and then clapped for him. It doesn't make any sense to me. But then again, we live in a world where basically reality is more it's wilder than fiction, to one point or another.
The opinion, I think, in America, and I just looked it up because I wanted to make sure I was right about this. The majority of Americans don't like Bibi Netanyahu, and they don't like what he's doing, 53%. So, okay, in America, it's only 53%. And our media only tells us he's a great man, he's doing great things, et cetera, et cetera. So that in and of itself is impressive, I think, that, you know, 53% of Americans are thinking for themselves. What's it like if you're a citizen of the world looking at America and seeing what happened last night? Help me, as an American, understand how the rest of the world views us.
Well, at the moment, I mean, for the past 2 years or so, the world has changed the way it looks at the U.S. They have lost respect to the U.S. They have, at one point or another, basically they're seeing it as a circus at the moment. It's a circus show. It's a show business. It's another sitcom that they look at. They wait for your president just to laugh. Basically, they prepare their popcorn and they wait for Joe Biden to come on screen, basically mash his words together, and everybody just laughs about it the next day. Even your media makes fun of their own president. And then basically you bring the circus over to the Congress. I mean, you saw yesterday what you call the actual president of the United States, Bibi Netanyahu, and his last name is Miliakowski, by the way. It's not Netanyahu, but he changed it just to fit the region over here in the Levant. He brought his own circus with him. If you look at it, he brought an example out of every single traitor or settler that he can put his hands on. He brought people from Ethiopia just to talk to the Black community, and he brought basically people from the Bedouin society, the traitors, not all the Bedouin society, the traitors within that society that work with the Israelis, and is trying to insinuate that the Muslims and the Bedouin society actually likes Israel and works for it and defends it. And this is not true. And then he brought in the Sephardim and the Ashkenaz, so the white people who are part of the settlers and basically also the Levantine Jews who are part of the community. But if you look at the larger picture, the whole world has been running protests against this man. Everybody is calling him a war criminal. The ICJ issued basically sentences, it's not sentences, but like they issued decisions against these people. They asked for arrest warrants against him and his generals, army generals, and they've called it by its name. For the first time, an international court dares to say that the Israelis are committing genocide against the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. The only delusional ones are the Congress, and they do it on purpose because they get paid by AIPAC, as you said, and the American population, who are part of them, are oblivious because of what the media shows them.
How far?
And the other part that's actually protecting the genocide are being attacked, yeah, and by the Israelis, including Benjamin Netanyahu.
How far will this blind and crazy support that my government officials, not my country — my country is a great country and its people are great people — but the people in Washington who are all on the take and are corrupt are making these decisions? I just want to make sure we're straight about that. How far do you fear that they will go in their collusion and their support of Bibi Netanyahu? Because it seems to be, when he's done killing Palestinians and there's no Palestinians left to kill, he's going to then move to Yemen, and he's going to move to, obviously, you know, the situation with Lebanon. And who knows how long before we're in a full-out war with Iran? I mean, and this is not me saying this. This is a lot of geopolitical minds who have come together and said they're very concerned about this.
Everybody's concerned. I mean, you have a genocidal maniac over here running the show on behalf of your own country, and your president is not stopping him. The Congress is not stopping him. It's up to the honest people of the United States to stop him by basically voting right. And the idea is that the media is not showing them the whole picture. That's the sad part. So the population who are now aware, and they're basically going on protests, what they're doing is trying to tell the rest of the Americans that there's a genocide happening over here. We are possibly is knocking on the doors of a World War III that starts from the Levant because of this man that our Congress brought over here. Now, until when your own population will continue to accept that your politicians drag them by the nose and from one war to another, from Iraq all the way until now, and lie about the reasons why they're going into that war, I don't know. You have to tell me. I mean, those are your people. At the
end
of the day,
it's not about my people, Leila. It's about my colleagues in the media. As you probably know, I'm sure you looked me up. I was the anchor at CNN and was fired for being critical of the thing that we're talking about now because I told the truth. I worked at Fox News. I worked at NBC. I've even worked at Univision and Hispanic television. And I've learned that now more than ever, the members of the media, even down to the, not just the editors, but the actual talking heads, are in collusion with the forces who are bringing these things about, the ones who want us to start war with Russia for some reason.
Of course, I mean, like, think about it this way. You've done your baptism of fire by basically working with all these entities, and you know them from inside out, right? You know how they operate, you know the agendas. The sad part is that they play the zoom-in, zoom-out game. Whenever they want to show you that basically Bibi Netanyahu had a successful speech at the Congress, they will only show you part of the Congress that's clapping for him. Rarely do they show you basically the ones that are disgruntled with him and they don't want him. And the sad part is that the media is also playing the other game. They're claiming that Democrats have walked out or they basically boycotted this session, right? And I was in a discussion with another media outlet and I had to explain to them that the Democrats didn't go into or basically to that speech, not because they are against the genocide, but because they hate Bibi Netanyahu. The Democrats have been trying to replace Bibi Netanyahu with Benny Gantz, who's basically the former minister of war in the Israeli entity. The only ones who actually care about this genocide for it to stop are Rashida Tlaib, who actually held a pamphlet saying, you're a war criminal, you're committing genocide, and basically Bernie Sanders, who had called him a war criminal, openly, and this guy basically is a Jewish representative of the people in the Congress, and he actually called Bibi Netanyahu that. Others, they didn't say anything. Actually, most of them actually voted for giving arms and funding for the Israelis at one point or another to support them with this ongoing genocide.
What about the Gulf states and the Arab world? What about the Saudi Arabias and the Qatars and the Jordans and the Egypts? And Lebanon, I mean, are those leaders, are those countries doing enough to push back? I almost get the sense that they're not, but I'm not an expert. I leave it to you.
All right. So, as you know, basically, there are Arab countries that have normalized ties with the Israelis. That includes some of the GCC countries, not all of them. The United Arab Emirates, for example, they have great ties with the Israelis. Bahrain as well. Saudi Arabia, until now, they refused to normalize ties until the Israelis agreed to a two-state solution. That was their stipulation. Once you agree to that, we will normalize ties with you, which means basically, in principle, they have no problem with normalizing ties with the Israelis, but so long that the Palestinians get their own state as well. When it comes to Lebanon, I have to tell you, I mean, it's one of the very few countries in the region that's fighting on behalf of everybody else, because the Israelis continue to occupy Lebanese territories, and we have a resistance that's very well armed, very well trained, and the Israelis fear it. And that's basically, it's not only Hezbollah, but we also have six factions under the umbrella of the resistance that include basically Harakat Amal, the Social Nationalists, the SSMP, and others. So when it comes to Lebanon, it's doing its part. It's fighting, it's supporting the Palestinians, and it's trying to pressure the Israeli military to stop its war when it comes to Gaza. The Americans and the Israelis have sent a mediator to Lebanon to actually try to convince the Lebanese to stop fighting on behalf of the Palestinians. And the Lebanese said, until there's a ceasefire in Gaza, we're not going to stop that front. And until now, the Israelis and the Americans are trying to pressure Lebanon over that. When it comes to other countries, I mean, Yemen is doing a phenomenal job. I mean, they have the least armed army in the region. And they're doing something that nobody else could. They stood in the face of the Israelis. They actually managed to send all the way and hit Tel Aviv in the heart. They managed to kill an Israeli sniper who was killing people in Gaza at one point or another. And basically, they're doing all they can. The Iraqis as well. The Palestinians, I mean, they're not that well armed, and they're manufacturing their own weapons from inside Gaza that has been under siege for the past 15 years. And they're still basically making do. But when it comes to the Gulf states, Arab states in general, and Muslim states, 57 of them, they're doing nothing.
Yeah.
Silence.
Yeah.
And that's the sad part.
Nothing, silence, and that's a sad point. Well said. Leila, thank you so much. We appreciate your time. I look forward to talking to you again. You're a great person to talk to. You have a very important voice that needs to be heard, and my appreciation to you.
Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for your, basically, for hosting me.
No, thank you. Thanks, our show. So much thanks to all of you. Remember to always look outside your own box. Truth, as we like to say, they don't live in boxes. You got to ask. You got to look. You got to find. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll be looking for you next time.